I'm Chris Rapley, Director of the Science Museum, and we're looking at our new antenna exhibit on contemporary science and technology issues called Future Food. And it addresses the issues of food security, which is of course a concern now with a growing population. We have 6.5 billion people on the planet today. By 2050 we'll have 9 billion people if the projections are right. And also the planet by that time will be suffering from the more severe effects of climate change. And both of those issues have big consequences for the food supply. We don't actually have enough food at present, and it's not distributed well enough to feed the population we have today, many hungry people. So what this exhibit does is it looks at the contribution that GM might make to addressing those issues, increasing the food supply, making it more nutritious and more robust against climate change, pest diseases and so on. And then it looks at the alternatives, because of course there are many who would like to avoid using GM, and there are many other agricultural techniques that either exist today or are being developed that could help. And the exhibits essentially balance those two against each other. The museum itself is neutral on this topic. You know, what we're trying to do is offer the opportunity for a mature and sensible debate about a very important issue, which in the past has suffered from, extreme positions, a lot of emotion. And so we're trying to calm down the emotion. And in fact, at our Dana Centre on the 22nd of January, we'll have a debate at which Bob Watson, for one, who's the Chief Scientific Advisor to DEFRA, will take a lead, where we hope that people can engage and see if we can take this subject forward.
And some interesting results so far.
Yes, well, what the exhibit allows people to do, having seen the evidence sort of one way or the other, is to decide what they think the key issue is. Is it food safety, the role of big companies, the need to feed more people, or the impact on the environment, or indeed the other way around, the environmental impact on food? And fascinatingly, I'm looking at the aggregate figures so far, and they're split perfectly equally. 24% think food safety is the biggest issue, 25% are concerned about the role of big companies, 26% think feeding more people is the issue, and another 26% think that the environment is the issue. If you look down at, have you joined the debate and what do you think we should do in the future as a civilization or a global civilization, should we go ahead and use GM? Only 8% say not now. Only 9% say use now, and then the rest are split pretty much between use now with caution or we need to know more. So for the moment, there isn't a consensus emerging about how to shape the future, but that's what I hope will emerge at the end of this initiative.
My name is Tim Lang. I'm Professor of Food Policy at City University in London. We're entering a new era in the 21st century in the sense that, unlike in the mid-20th century, which faced an awesome problem of undersupply, lack of production, and maldistribution, we've got that still, but at a bigger scale. But in an era of climate change, water shortage, energy crunch, biodiversity tottering, massive urbanization, population explosion, healthcare costs, a nutrition transition, a totally more complex, more intensive set of problems overlaid onto the 20th century's problems. That is a new era.
And another important aspect you said is GM has to fit in with food culture as well.
I'm someone who looks at food through five major questions. The first is production. Are you growing the right things? Can you do enough, etc.? The second is a question of values. What do you want from your food? The third is an issue of policy frameworks. What are your policies? Are they helping or hindering meeting those objectives? The fourth is the question of governance. How do you do this? How and who controls the food? And the fifth and final is the most delicate of all, culture. Food isn't just about nutrients or biology or about genes. It's about meanings. It's about what we want from the food. It's about social engagement. That's a cultural issue. A food may be perfectly fit and safe to eat, but people don't want it because it's not meeting their values, their objectives, their life aspirations. All of those issues are raised by GM, and it was introduced in a very cack-handed way by big and powerful companies basically bullying it through. The good thing is there was tremendous debate and resistance in Europe. I think we've now entered a more mature phase where we can look and say, well, might this technology have some use? Could it be used sustainably? Is the problem that a small number of very powerful companies own it and control it? Why should they patent these things? Why should anyone patent anything that lives or is from the living world? This is a debate that we can now have.
GM's always suffered with a perception problem, and you mentioned it there. You yourself called it it was introduced in the UK in a cack-handed fashion. We've had the former science minister on this programme saying that mistakes were made over the handling of GM. Has it set the UK back years and years?
I think it's actually brought the UK into a more mature position. I am a food democrat, not a food controller. I think history shows that ultimately it is people who will decide because they eat. And what we had was, and why I used the word cack-handed, what we had was a classic illustration of a top-down injection of a technology. Here, by the way, here's something we've done, wham, bang, here it is. And then the companies went bonkers when there was, well, why do we need this? Why? What are the implications? What does it do to me? Etc. Perfectly legitimate questions. What we're now in the position, 10, 15 years on, is to be able to say, well, could it be useful for sustainable agriculture? I don't think it'll offer anything to deal with the nutrition problems or urbanization. I don't think it's got anything to answer critical issues for world food policy like that. But maybe it's got an opportunity to help us speed up the adaptation to some issues associated with climate change. Who knows? I think we should debate it. I don't think we should say it's either Frankenstein or it's the answer to everything, you know, the best thing since sliced bread, as we say. I don't think anything can be pocketed and pigeonholed as crudely as that. The good thing about Britain and Europe is actually we've had a fast learning curve about food in the last 20 years. It's fabulous. We're the most literate food culture now. We're very sophisticated in our understandings of risk, of difficulties, of control, of what we want. We know these complex issues. On the one hand, massive obesity, out of control overweight, alongside massive malnutrition and rising problems of diet-related disease. We can understand all of that. Now let the debate happen again.
We're having this debate here in the UK now. Is it a waste of time since it's already been introduced in the States, which is producing food on a massive scale?
At one level, the horse has bolted. There's no doubt about that. But that taught people like me, or reminded people like me, of a very old lesson in food policy. Whereas when a technology has been developed, if some people say no to it, it'll be dumped on those who have least capacity to resist. There was a great deal of concern about the technology being foisted on developing countries. And the good thing that happened was there's a real north-south developed world, developing world exchange about the issues. And I think in the developing world, there's equally a very mature debate going on. I don't think the issue is these big Americans have done it, therefore it's inevitable. I actually think the American technology might run into the sands because it's so focused upon monocropping, so tacked into and locked into big, intensive, oil-guzzling American intensive agriculture, that actually GM in America is probably not going to survive as long as its adherents think. I think even in the US, a sustainable development debate is going to happen over GM. It's already happening, actually, not least due to the genetic pollution issue.
I'm Emile Frison, the Director General of Bioversity International. We are an international agricultural research organization which is dealing with agricultural biodiversity, the way in which diversity in crops and animals can contribute to sustain and improve people's livelihoods. Our focus is essentially on developing countries. The challenge is about fighting hunger and poverty and doing it in a sustainable way. So we have our headquarters in Rome, but we are present in more than 20 different countries around the world, where we are working with a wide range of partners to address this issue of agricultural biodiversity.
What involvement with GM do you have at the moment?
Well, we also have a more particular interest in three commodities that have come into our agenda for historical reasons. One of them is bananas. And bananas is a very peculiar crop in the sense that it's been very, very little research has been done on bananas, essentially because they are sterile. There's no seeds in the banana. And therefore, classical breeding is very, very difficult or virtually impossible in the whole history of breeding in the last 50 years. There have been only a few varieties that have made it so far. And most of the types of bananas that are important for poor people in developing countries are totally sterile. So we are confronted with a situation where new diseases are spreading, are devastating harvests of the crops that are the staple food for poor people. And GM technology is one that can bring or can be part of the solution. And so we have been involved bringing together research organizations from developing countries, and more particularly Uganda in this case, with advanced research institutes in Europe, and we have been developing the technology for bananas, and work is now going on in trying to find genes of resistance to some of these diseases in wild bananas and transfer them to the cultivated banana. So that is one example. It's a small fraction of what we are doing. Most of our agenda is by better using diversity as a way to address the problems. So it's not, resistance is only one approach that can be followed. Using diversity is another approach, and which is the biggest part of our agenda is on that, because it allows us to address a whole range of issues, not just a particular disease, but it allows us to have agriculture that is more sustainable. There's sufficient demonstration that diversity is an important factor in sustainability. It makes the production more a greater stability and resilience, as particularly important in the face of climate change, where we see greater fluctuations in the climatic conditions. One year you'll have a severe drought, and the next year you'll have a flood. It becomes much more unpredictable, and therefore having you don't put all your eggs in one basket, and therefore the diversity is a very important tool in that. And so we want to intensify agriculture because the demand is increasing, but do it in a way that builds on diversity rather than on a simplification. That also links to what was one of the themes of the exhibit here about how it relates to food. And more diverse agriculture produces a more balanced diet, which is better for your health. And I think there have been a number of studies that really demonstrate that diversity is a very important factor in the relationship between food and health. And just a diverse diet is good for you. And what we see is all the problems related to the evolution of diets today is a simplification of the diet, energy rich and nutrient poor. And what we are trying to do is to reintroduce a greater diversity, which has all the production advantages that I mentioned about sustainability, resilience, facing the issues of climate change, but also at the same time has this positive effect on the diet, because it makes more diverse food available for consumers, including in cities.
As part of this debate, one of the things you said is very important is producing the right kind of food. Mm-hmm. Why is that important?
Well, I think in the past, too much attention, especially in fighting hunger, too much attention has been paid to just the quantity of food. And the main comparator that was used was the number of calories available per capita per year or per day. And what we see now is that even though the number of calories available is increasing in many countries, the health status of people is decreasing, is getting worse. And that is because the cheapest food, which poor people have access to, is energy rich and nutrient poor. It's the main staple cereals or things like cassava in Africa, which is energy rich but nutrient poor. So what we need is to go back to some of the more traditional diets, which are based on a very wide range of diversity. We have one example in Kenya where we've been working on African green leafy vegetables. In Kenya alone, there were more than 200 species used as green leafy vegetables. For the whole of Africa, it's about 1,000 species. Some of them cultivated in backyards, some of them picked from the wild. These are important in small quantities, but are extremely important from the quality of the diet, because that's where you have the micronutrients, the vitamins that are providing this balanced diet and are responsible for a more healthy outcome. And what we are seeing now is with this cheap, energy-rich but nutrient-poor food, is that people are abandoning their traditions and they buy what is cheapest on the market, and that has a very big effect on the health status of populations, where we see these diseases like type 2 diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, exponentially increasing among the poor people in developing countries. That's a real issue. It's like, it's in a way, it's a time bomb. If we don't address that now, the countries won't afford to treat those people. It's, in the UK, you have diabetes, you can get treatment, or you get cardiovascular disease, you can get treated. If you have the same disease in Africa in a poor country, you die. So the situation is very, very different and really needs much more attention in what type of agricultural development models we want to put and we want to invest in.